It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Flu season's here. A winter uptick in COVID-19 could be around the corner, and people in Wisconsin are making the decision whether or not to get vaccinated against these very contagious respiratory illnesses.
According to state immunization data, the number of people in Wisconsin who received a COVID vaccine in September is down about 33% compared to that month last year. And for flu shots, uptake is down 5% for September.
A forthcoming study co-written by a UW-Madison economist finds evidence that COVID vaccines significantly reduce the spread of the disease within households.
Dan Sachs is the Leslie P. Schultz Professor of Risk Management and Insurance in the Wisconsin School of Business. He studies the economics of health, and his findings will be published in the American Economic Journal in January. Dan, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of question did you set out to answer when you started this research on COVID-19 vaccine uptake and the spin-off consequences of vaccines?
Yeah, we started thinking about this project in early 2022. So the vaccines had been around for about a year. It was pretty clear from the clinical trials that they worked in the sense that if I got vaccinated, it would protect me. But there was a big question, which was, how much does it protect other people around me? And a lot of organizations were requiring people to be vaccinated before they could come in. States sometimes had vaccine mandates. And at the same time, there was intense pushback about this. And the motivation behind all of it was these what we call indirect effects. How much does it protect other people? And we really didn't know. That's what we wanted to learn.
So you zoom in on the indirect effects of the COVID-19 vaccine. What stands out to you in the research?
So we start by looking at what happens in a household, essentially, when the kids get vaccinated. The reason we're looking at the kids is that they were kind of the last to be eligible for the vaccines. And so we can compare what happens to families with kids who became eligible because of their age versus families with just younger kids who aren't yet eligible. We think that's a very convincing comparison. There's not a lot of other factors that could be different between those families. And we find pretty substantial protective effects for families. So if a kid in the family is vaccinated, that protects the kid. And for every kid case of COVID you prevent, that prevents about half a case of COVID in the rest of the family.
We've had a number of COVID boosters since then, since you started this research. Is it still applicable, your findings?
So our findings are definitely looking at kids who are getting their first COVID shot. Mm-hmm. So we're learning the indirect effects for them. We find protection for the people in their household. And it probably won't surprise you that for the families that vaccinate their kids, mostly the parents are already vaccinated. So we're finding fewer breakthrough infections, protection for family members who are themselves already vaccinated. So in that sense, there's some reason to think that this continues to apply. Certainly, there are many people out there who have not gotten even one COVID shot or not gotten one in a while. It could well apply to them. That said, there is a big kind of lingering question for all the COVID vaccines, which is how effective is the third, fourth, fifth booster? I think mm-hmm. that's still an open question, especially for these indirect effects.
What happens when the kids are at school? Is there still that type of effect of giving that type of insulation from COVID?
Yeah, so I have two young kids at home, mm-hmm. and they sneeze all over me. It's no surprise that their vaccines protect me. But we also wondered, what about less close contacts? So, you know, people that you don't interact with face-to-face super often. And the way that we studied this was looking at schools. And in Indiana, where our data are from, 12-year-olds, that's the youngest age group eligible for the vaccines, will go to middle schools where most kids can get vaccinated because they're older than 12. But some go to elementary schools where almost no one is vaccinated because they're all younger. And we wanted to see, is there some protective effect of having more vaccinated kids in your school? And here we found no. We didn't really see any protective effect. Maybe there's a small effect that we just didn't have enough data to pick up. That was a bit surprising to us. The way that we think about it is, again, maybe there's a small effect that we're not able to pick up. Maybe there's no effect. That's certainly possible, especially because there were a lot of mitigation measures in place. So schools, for example, staggered the start times of classes, so kids in different classes didn't mix too closely. And then another possibility is that, you know, what we're measuring is sometimes called herd immunity, like how much protection do we get collectively when more people are vaccinated or otherwise have immunity. And epidemiologists often think you need a lot of vaccination before you get to this herd immunity level. And schools in Indiana just did not have very high vaccination rates. So even in the high vaccination rate schools, maybe 30% of kids were vaccinated. So it's possible there just wasn't enough vaccination going around.
And can you explain why you used Indiana data?
Well, you know, there's a joke about a drunk person looking for his keys under a spot under a streetlight, and that's not where he lost them, but that's where the light is. And economists are guilty of this too. So we look at Indiana mainly because we have excellent data from Indiana. So we work with a healthcare informatics group that's closely associated with Indiana University called the Reagan Streif Institute that also has longstanding ties with the state and helped them put up COVID dashboards. So for Indiana, we had data on almost all COVID tests and almost all COVID vaccinations linked to medical records. So we could really study this group in detail. You know, I lived in Indiana for 8 years. It's a great state. It's not that I think that this is the only place to study this, but we had the data. In some ways, Indiana is also helpful because it's kind of a middle-of-the-road vaccination rate state, and they had a very strict age-based rollout of the COVID vaccine. So some states prioritized like healthcare workers or people with particular conditions or other groups. Here, it was really just age, so it was a clean setting for our study, too.
Here in Wisconsin, we don't know yet whether there will be a seasonal COVID-19 wave this winter. We know virus is circulating. Do you have evidence from your research that might affect people's behavior toward getting a COVID booster now?
I think the COVID booster is a real decision. I think that many people experience short but real side effects of getting it. So I think that there's some reason not to want to vaccinate. I think most people recognize also that there's a health benefit of getting a COVID vaccine or COVID booster, which is that COVID is also a nasty illness and like you don't want to experience that. What our research adds is two things. I think some people are not sure how much the COVID vaccines work like in the real world outside of the clinical setting. And, you know, we found that they were very effective for the kids who got them. The second is that a lot of the current kind of guidance around the COVID boosters focuses on personal risks and personal decisions. That's an appropriate framework. But one thing that it misses is you might want to get vaccinated, not just to protect yourself, but to protect your family and people that you interact with closely. And we have some evidence, at least, that in the past, that was a real effect of the COVID vaccines.
You know, along those lines, a Pew Research survey from March, it found that more Americans reported getting a flu shot than an updated COVID-19 vaccine. And so if both vaccines are readily available, why might uptake be different with these two vaccines?
That is also a thing that I've seen in my data, and it's quite clear that more people are getting the flu vaccine than the COVID vaccine. In other research I've done on vaccines, it seems that people worry a lot about how effective the vaccine is, but also these even just short-run side effects. And there is definitely a perception that the COVID vaccine has a bit more of a punch than the flu vaccine. So I believe that that is one contributing factor. The COVID vaccines are also newer. They're based on an mRNA technology. As far as I've seen, there's no reason to doubt the safety of that technology, and it has many promises for its ability to develop new vaccines very quickly should new pandemics emerge. But there's also a lot of discomfort with that newer technology.
So as we enter flu and COVID season, now is the time people are making that decision whether or not to get vaccinated, making a decision about their child and vaccinations. How do COVID vaccination rates this year so far compare to previous years? What's standing out to you about immunization data here in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So the COVID vaccination rates are down, at least based on last month's data. Still waiting for October to come in. I suspect that a big reason for that has to do with changing federal guidelines around vaccinations. So up until this year, the CDC recommended that everyone 6 months and older get a COVID vaccine. Now they say, we recommend that you make a personal decision, and we really only endorse it for people with certain risk factors or 65 and older. And some pharmacists have reported that that makes them not sure whether they can stock and distribute the vaccines as easily. I haven't seen that it's been a huge challenge for people to get vaccines, but it's definitely slowed down. So vaccination rates are about 30% lower this year than they were in 2024 for COVID in particular.
We're talking with Dan Sachs, professor in risk management and insurance at the Wisconsin School of Business, and he co-authored this study which found that COVID vaccination significantly reduces the spread of the disease within households. We also are seeing some confusion this season about vaccine guidance and whether it will be covered, the vaccine, COVID vaccine, will be covered through insurance. What are you learning about the retail cost of the vaccine and whether insurance companies are picking up the tab?
Yeah, so a lot of the uncertainty here was that insurers have to cover a vaccine if this important committee, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, endorses it. They did not uniformly endorse the COVID vaccine, but that doesn't mean that insurers can't cover it. And in fact, insurers seem to be covering it without exception, as far as I have seen. So, you know, patients are not having to pay out of pocket for the COVID vaccines, despite the fact that it is not uniformly endorsed by this committee.
And full disclosure, when I got my COVID booster, the person who gave it to me, the nurse said, and by the way, if your insurance doesn't cover it, you will be billed X amount of dollars. I think it was like $129 or something like that. So there was that disclaimer right before I got the COVID booster. Is that something you're seeing?
Well, when I look at the data and see this decline in vaccinations, there's many factors that might contribute to it. But I think a concern that a lot of people have raised is that this kind of ambiguous guidance has discouraged vaccinations, even though it's still possible to go out and get a vaccination. And there's a lot of ways that, you know, people can be discouraged. But someone telling you, by the way, there's a chance you'll have to pay $130 is a pretty strong discouragement, and it may well turn some people off.
Hmm. Where does your research go next? What are you looking at with this data or other data sets?
So I am really interested in what people believe about these vaccines and how those beliefs affect their decisions to vaccinate or not. So one thing that I've learned through surveys is, you know, people are very sensitive to what they believe the effectiveness of these vaccines to be and how severe they think the side effects are. And looking at the flu vaccine, we find people are actually pretty accurate about the effectiveness. So flu vaccine is only moderately effective. People seem to know that. Where they're too pessimistic is about the side effects. So especially people who are hesitant to vaccinate, they expect to have really severe side effects of vaccination, much worse than what we see in the clinical trials of the vaccines. So we're interested in whether better information about the side effects might shift people's beliefs and persuade some to vaccinate.
I keep going back to your area of expertise in health economics and think about, you know, how do vaccines and health risk management fit into the business world? And what is the business sense here?
Yeah. We studied this in part because it's just deeply interesting to us, but vaccines are also a textbook example, an economics textbook example of what we call an externality. So, you know, most interactions that people have mainly matter for the two people in that interaction. So you go to the pharmacy and get your heart disease medication, that's between you and the pharmacist. Vaccines are potentially different because if you get vaccinated, that's not just between you and the pharmacist. Now that's between everyone you interact with who you might spread disease to. So economists usually think that government support of vaccines is warranted because we want to encourage people to get these benefits for everyone else when they vaccinate. So we were interested in measuring that. That's an economics answer more than a business answer. But it is also true that businesses both need a healthy workforce, people coming in. And in fact, many businesses at least set up on-site flu vaccine clinics because they believe that they'll have a healthier workforce if more of them are vaccinated. And then we saw, especially during COVID, that restaurants and bars and social places both may have themselves believed that having more vaccinated patrons kept everyone safer. But definitely for many people, there was a fear of going out and socializing because they were afraid that they might get COVID. And if everyone else around them was also vaccinated, they might be more willing to come in. So understanding these indirect effects of vaccines, I think, is quite important for many business decisions.
And you mentioned like having a flu clinic at someone's office or right down the street or right outside their building. How much of a role does accessibility play in the decision of whether to get a vaccine for you or for your child?
It seems to me that for many adults making vaccine decisions, that accessibility is not so important in the sense that accessibility is already very high. So most people at least report that they live near a pharmacy, they could get vaccinated if they wanted to. On the other hand, there's other evidence that if you bring your kids into the doctor's office for their checkup and it's October, so a flu shot is available, they're very likely to get the flu shot. If you bring them in August, no flu shots available, they're much less likely to get it. And so some combination of like, it's accessible, it's right there, and you're in a healthcare provider's office at the right time does make a difference.
You mentioned flu season in Wisconsin, which is typically starting this month and really peaks in December through February. What do you notice about flu vaccination rates this season in Wisconsin?
Flu vaccination rates to me in Wisconsin, and as far as I can tell for the country as a whole, look pretty similar to what we've seen in the past. So for the country as a whole, there's no data being updated right now because of the shutdown, I think.
Yeah.
But the last I checked, we were kind of a couple weeks behind schedule, which is consistent with a slightly later advisory committee meeting. For Wisconsin, it looks very similar to past years. So basically on track. I don't see a lot of disruption there.
And finally, based on all of this research that you have done on the direct and indirect effects of the COVID-19 vaccine, do any particular public policy ideas stand out to you that would really influence how a state and their health could be and what policy decisions could come out of this?
Well, we ended up finding the clearest effects at fairly narrow areas. So in households, and I suspect that's what we know for sure. I suspect that something similar happens among, for example, coworkers who work closely together. And so, you know, what that tells me is that there's a pretty strong case for groups of people who interact closely together to decide, you know, it's important that we all vaccinate. In the past, especially at the tail end of the pandemic, some states started proposing laws to make it illegal for an employer to require vaccination. And our results say that those laws would have real costs, that you could, if you wanted to, promote the health of your employees, particularly if they wanted it, by requiring them all to vaccinate. And bans on employer vaccine mandates undermine that.
Dan, thank you for sharing your research.
Thanks for having me.
Dan Sachs is a professor of risk management and insurance in the Wisconsin School of Business. He talked with us about his study that explores how COVID vaccination affects the spread of the disease within households.